Hello, Rune Warriors. It's good to be back. Today, I am once again joined by the High Lord of the Takan, Josh.
Well, hello.
And our Chief Lieutenant of Wykar's Undying Legions, Gabe.
As always, pleased to be here.
And I'm Aaron, Prime Guardian of the Aemilin Forest. Today's podcast is going to be a little bit of fun. The Uthuk are out, and we finally got a person in our local meta who got a set of Uthuk, so Josh and I had a chance to play against them. And we will give you some battle reports on what we did. We've also got to eat crow on this episode a little bit. We're going to go through some of the upgrades that we didn't think were up to snuff on in our initial reviews, but we're going to issue some apologies, I think, in this episode.
I'm so looking forward to it.
Right.
I don't want to. I didn't sign up to be wrong.
Right. We are always right. Never forget that. We are also going to take a look at the three upcoming expansions, one for elves, one for humans, one for undead. We're talking about, of course, the Denatri, the Scouts, and the Wraiths, and we'll get our opinions on those.
I want them all.
Yeah.
I don't even play undead anymore, and I want them all.
Right? They look so pretty.
I want some Scouts for my undead.
Yeah. I thought you'd want the Wraiths because they're cavalry and you finally have a place to put Morrow that isn't really, really dumb.
Yeah. All right. Well,
get into it.
Let's get into it. We should start off with our Uthuk play reports. All right. So, firstly, I want to say welcome to Ryan, who is the new member of our meta up at Around the Table Games. Ryan bought an Uthuk set, and he has been playing those. I think, Josh, I think all three games he's played of Rune Wars, he's played Uthuk. I don't think he's actually played his other factions.
We did a demo game where he wasn't.
Okay, well, all three of his 200 points, point games.
He's done one game as an undead because we did a demo and then he played an undead game, but that is superfluous details.
Oh, okay. Okay. So I'm wrong, but he definitely played two games, at least as Uthuk. He lacks some experience, I think, which led to some missed opportunities.
He listens to the podcast.
Yeah, he does. No, but he definitely did. And I want to take an aside right now, and I want to say, look, Ryan's a learning player, and when I played him, I had a Megan bomb go off for a bunch of damage. I mean, it was like lethal three with all three green runes, plus I rolled a bunch of hits, plus I rolled a bunch of surges. And when a bomb like that goes off, and you have to tell a new player, oh yeah, by the way, I just killed half your unit. It's tough to kind of get that across in such a way that it's like, look, I'm really not trying to spike the ball on you. I'm trying to, as an aside, I'm just trying to say that when you're teaching a new player and something like that goes off that's catastrophic, purely luck based, of course, make sure just to go through the procedures and walk them through what's happening, and also walk them through in the post game. Maybe how they can defend against it better or what, because they haven't experienced it. And Rune Wars is such a lethal game that you don't want to be like, oh, yeah, I totally just killed half your unit. Eat that. And then they go, well, this game kind of sucks. I never want to play it again.
I've altered the dice. Pray I don't alter them any further.
Exactly. But no, Ryan's doing a great job. He missed some opportunities, but he caught them later in the game. And of course, I couldn't help him a lot because I'm not 100% familiar with the Uthuk units. But I will say those things are quick.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, I agree. Oh, lightning fast. So we played Careful Approach and we played Bounty. And my bounty unit was so what I played was three units of two tray Leonks, a four tray unit of Deepwood Archers with the the Verdant Sorceress and Hunter's Guile, so I could get purely so I could get Overgrow tokens out. And then I played Megan with Heartseeker, and I think Melkorn's Bequest, whichever one it is that lets you do her ability to stun things and all that stuff. And then I played Summer Song with the Pack Leader Spear and Ambush Predator. I'm not sure what he had 100%, but he had a four tray unit of Flesh Rippers. He had 2 1 tray units of Spine Threshers. He had Ravos, and he had a 6 tray unit of Berserkers with the War Sprinter, I think the War Shrieker or something like that. One of those good Shrieker banner champion combos that make them just run like heck. Aggressive Shrieker, War Sprinter, and something else, which I'm forgetting at the
moment. Yeah, I wish I knew. I'm not familiar with them either.
Yeah, it's so scary because it's like, oh, for a skill, you can either do this thing or that thing. And it's like, wait a minute. And then he had the upgrade that lets him play with the top card of his morale deck face up.
Yeah. Was that the Cacophony Reaver, I think?
Yes, thank you. And basically he gets lethal for the number of morale symbols on the card. But that is scary when he goes fishing and he pulls up a 3 and then he's like, oh, I'm not going to panic test you anymore because I get lethal 3. It's like, no, I'll take the panic test. Please panic test me. yes. So, yeah, it's interesting. Okay, so I started with he started with 200 points. I started with 198 points. So I was the first player. We started with the Demorian Fissure, the Thorned, what is it called? The Thorned area, the elf. Terrain. Sorry, I'm hard to brain tonight. And then we also had the Bone Totem, which was really cool to play with. And unfortunately for him, when he was running Ravos across, Ravos ran into the Bone Totem, and I had Megan with Heartseeker. And the Bone Totem says you get lethal for the attacker gets lethal for the number of red runes against any unit within one of the Bone Totem. Yeah, so not only is Megan now have lethal green, she's also got lethal green plus lethal red. So that's quite good. That ends up being a lot on a lot of rolls. I also made sure that I was staying away from Ravos because of his wound ability, and I made sure to gun him down first.
Mm-hmm.
Now Ryan made a critical mistake where he ran into the Bone Totem with Ravos, but he did kind of a smart thing where he was keeping Ravos next to his bounty unit, which was the 6 trays of Berserkers. And by running Ravos next to those guys, Ravos didn't end up wounding himself. The bad news is Ravos ended up wounding his bounty unit.
So
his
bounty unit. Would you choose to do that? That's a tough call.
That's a tough call. I think if he had it to do over again, and if I would, okay, if I'm playing coach for him and not his opponent,
mm-hmm.
I would tell him to keep Ravos parallel with the Flesh Rippers, because the Flesh Rippers are 1/3s.
Oh yeah.
And they can soak that up. But and
remind me again, what the artifacts Ravos had? Did he have the
Oh, I don't remember what he had on Ravos.
In my game, he had, I can't remember what the upgrades for Ravos are called. Blah.
There's like,
I played against the Viscera Goblet version.
Yeah, there's Viscera Goblet and Cacophony Reaver, maybe? No.
I cannot remember.
Oh my goodness.
I'm blanking. Although I am also.
Well, we are not Ithoc players, so.
Yeah, we need that Uthuk member come fill us in on what's up with the Uthuk. However, but he had
Insatiable Hunger is the other one.
Insatiable, that's right.
Before each end phase you move.
Yes.
He doesn't have another. Mr. Gov is the artifact, so that's the only one. Yeah, okay, got it.
Insatiable Hunger.
Yeah, I'm not sure what he was playing with, but he wasn't moving in the end phase. So either he forgot that he had the ability to do that, or he just didn't have that upgrade. However, one of the most unfortunate things is he forgot about his Flesh Ripper's mandatory one move.
Oh.
So, and the thing is, he also had the upgrade on them that said, hey, you can make that one move a two move, or you can make that one move a turn, or you can keep the one move as a one move. Mm-hmm. Very, very, very versatile upgrade. And I love that upgrade for those Flesh Rippers. And I have to say, I am back to thinking Flesh Rippers are my number two favorite cavalry.
Behind
the cat.
Cat?
So, yeah. So this is another sidetrack. But in order in my head, it goes the Leonx, the Flesh Rippers, the Oathsworn, and the Death Knights. Now, if you were to take points out of it, it would be Death Knights, Leonx, Flesh Rippers, and Oathsworn.
Gotcha.
I just think point per punch, I guess, is that a term? So points per punch, Death Knights seem kind of tough to shoehorn into things without making it all about them, I guess. Does that make sense?
That does make sense, yeah.
And you might be able to correct me on that. It might just be the fact that in our local games, that's what has ended up happening because, oh, it's the new shiny unit. I want to play with it as much as possible.
They're that good. I mean, it makes sense to double down on them.
Right, yeah, so. Yeah. And if you play with four or six of them, four tray or six tray of them, it's very cost prohibitive and you can't fit much else in. So now you're looking at putting Morrow in a four tray of reanimates to help grow some archers and another melee infantry to support, kind of thing. But that's what's been going on in our local meta. Mm-hmm. So
back to the Flesh Rippers, card that allows them to modify that. Does not come in the core set. So if he was just playing with cards, he may not have equipped it. If he wasn't playing with his printout.
No, he was playing with the printout.
Oh, okay, cool.
He just forgot. He was asking me what it did. He thought what it did was when he revealed a march on the modifier dial, not even on the action dial on the modifier dial. So because he wasn't doing that, he thought he couldn't use it. And I said, oh no, this is during your mandatory march at the beginning. And he's like, mandatory march. And we forgot to do that. So yeah, it wasn't a great game in the respect that it was close or anything. In fact, I think once Ryan gets a lot more experience, that margin of victory is going to shrink very much. Very, very much. I will tell you, just looking at their potential, the plan was gun down Ravos first, which I did. Figure out how to deal with those spine threshers, which I did by the skin of my teeth, and I was saved by the morale deck, because what had happened was I ended up blocking the spine threshers from my archers with a unit of Leonx, and then with the fact that he didn't charge into me, he got a panic token, and then I did an attack with my Leonx on him that showed a morale on the modifier dial. And I ended up pulling that card and playing that card with just enough panic to turn him 180 and march him two.
Mm-hmm.
So with Megan having the Heartseeker and with my archers having line of sight to him, I turned him 180, marched him two, and then gunned him down two attacks in a row. So that was really, really, really fortunate that I pulled that. Had that not been pulled, he probably would have used that spine thresher to eat up my remaining Leonx, and then he would have been into my archers, which would have been disastrous.
Right.
Absolutely disastrous. His flesh rippers eventually did get to my archers and they survived by the skin of their teeth. I think I had one tray left by the time the game ended.
Wow.
And so I think I would say three things really compounded on Ryan, and that was being new, not being experienced at the game in general. Two, not being experienced, or well, I should say, not being experienced slash playing probably the hardest deployment map in Careful Approach. And three, not being 100% sure how the Uthuk worked, and that might be corollary to the first point of not being very experienced at the game. But I do have to say, I love the potential.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, man, what would I do against them? Against a more experienced player, like, let's say if our friend Carson from Meeples was playing Uthuk, which he will, I think, in the store championship, if our messaging is any indication. I think everything is so fast. Those Flesh Rippers are really made to be MSU because they're tough, they're quick, and they can tie up your whole unit. So I could imagine somebody coming with an Uthuk army that has somewhere between 6 and 8 dials, and 2 to 4 of those dials would be 2 tray Flesh Rippers, possibly naked, just to go tie you up. So Ravos can come by and say, hey, what's up? By the way, you're taking a wound now. And just keep doing that to people.
That's mean.
It is mean. They're absolutely mean, and they're absolutely destructive, and I love it. And I at least want to proxy them or get Nick or Ryan to let us borrow a set to play on our next video. But we'll see how that works out. So I'll throw it to you, Josh. Josh, how did your game go against the Uthuk?
Yeah, I think I ended up playing against the same army too. I was playing elves at the time, and what? I was it's being weird. I've got two armies, and I wanted to try out the infantry, the elvish infantry. I was proxying those guys. Yeah, big 2x2 of spearmen on the board, and so I got my butt kicked. And yeah, trying new things, teaching new people. Like, I'm not taking the game tournament serious here. Just hanging out and had someone eat my lunch.
So I think my attitude wasn't necessarily serious either. My attitude was more, what can I do with my army against these guys?
Mm-hmm.
So it might have been a little bit more serious than what you were trying, but.
Probably. I had a fully kitted melee Megan. I don't like melee Megan anymore.
Yep.
I'm iffy on Megan, just in general. I think if you're going to use Megan, not to encroach on your territory here, I think if you're going to use Megan, you should put her in line, and you should be proccing her zappy ability as much as possible.
Yeah.
And while you can proc it with melee, I don't want her in melee. I'd rather her be shooting targets and zapping everyone around them.
Right. Makes sense.
So I didn't do that. I had melee Megan. Melee Megan was not as awesome as I was hoping. The Spine Threshers flanked quite nicely. The Elvish infantry unit, whose name is escaping me because...
Garnettis.
Those guys. I can't. I'm not braining. The brain is just. I did not set them up right. They were set up to get. I'd given the Deepwood Archers Dispatch Runner.
Ah, gotcha.
And I had intended for the Warriors to attack more than once, and the Archers had the Dispatch Runner accuracy'd off the tray, or is either accuracy or a panic that removed a figure upgrade. And no
dispatch runner, it would have to be a panic, a morale, because
panic,
because dispatch runner is not a figure upgrade.
So he got panicked off.
Oh
my goodness.
A different guy on the warrior side got murdered off. It was I had a lot of bad luck, and I didn't, you know, new unit, new stuff, new faction. I like the roll 3 blue, keep 2. That's fun.
Yeah.
Even knowing that the Uthuk move, he doesn't quite prepare you for what this didn't come up, but a potential 7 forward charge looks like.
Oh my god!
Right.
Yeah.
Berserkers are theoretically capable. I think the max is 7.
Yeah.
That's what you could get if you had an aggressive drummer and you just ran. So.
Yeah, with the war sprinter and the aggressive drummer, yeah, and all that stuff, yeah.
And that was, I gave him that, so.
That is pretty gnarly.
Because I built that army. So, technically, I beat myself.
Okay.
But, no, I still don't like, having seen the units, the Flesh Rippers are kind of cool. But I am, like, Ravos doesn't really appeal to me. Berserkers weren't really there. I'm not a huge fan of the Spine Threshers. It was really just the Flesh Rippers, a little bit.
I like the Spine Threshers too, actually. I think they are low. The low armor does make them dissolve quicker than I thought they would. I thought they would be a lot tougher.
Yeah, me too.
However, their ability to, oh yeah, it's the end of my turn, you have a panic, and oh yeah, if you have a panic, I get to re-roll. That is painful, especially with because now they get 2 red dice, and unlike golems, they get to go fishing with giving. Yes. They get to give you a panic and then go fishing if they whiff.
They are less brutal than golems, though.
They are less brutal, but I would rather have that mix of brutality and precision than just flat out brutality. If that makes sense.
No, I'm with you on that.
Plus that 5 hit points is just ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're pretty strong.
Anyway, sorry.
But they have to be, though, because that's the unit that Ravos has to join.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
True. Like, if the army is built that way, I mean, the panics text up at an alarming rate.
It does. And
so when you think you're out of the clear, then these guys roll up. Oh, no, you have no panic tokens on? Now you do. Ha.
So
let's get this ball rolling again.
Yeah.
The Spine Threshers only add panic if they don't have a panic already. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. If you've managed to clear it all out and then they come up, they're like, well, let's start all over.
Right.
I just can't get clear of this stuff.
Right. But I will say in the defense, well, in the balancing, I suppose, not really the defense, but the balancing of that is if you are playing the guy who plays with the morale card face up that says you get lethal whatever, if an Uthuk player, once they hit that 3...
Morale
token card, you know you're not going to get tested until their berserkers have finished killing off whatever unit they're engaged with, right?
That's a good point.
It's Cacophony Reaver.
Cacophony Reaver, yeah.
So you don't worry about...
I said that already, too. But very forgetful tonight. But I think my point being is you can kind of gauge when you're going to get morale tested by an Uthuk player. If they're playing optimally, I should say.
Is it a round that has a number in it?
Yes.
That's yeah.
You're going to be morale tested by the Uthuk player.
It will have a number divisible by 1.
Excellent. Yeah. Go ahead, Josh.
I was going to say, Gabe, how's your experience with
Uthuk so gone? I played on Tabletop Simulator with Budgernaut, who is my twin brother. He plays the Uthuk.
There's 2 of you?
There are 2 of us. Yes. So, and
he's very vocal about his support for Uthuk on his.
Yes. On the forums, he has been waiting and waiting. And he's finally been rewarded. He has 2 army boxes and is most eager for more Spine Threshers.
So, I can imagine. Yeah.
Yeah. So he played with a 3x2, you know, 6 tray of Berserkers with a Spine Thresher in the front and then Spine Thresher kind of lagging behind them. And then he had 2x1 trays of Flesh Rippers, and then Ravos. And Ravos had Fear Incarnate and the Viscera Goblet.
Why 2x1 the Flesh Rippers?
Why instead of 2x2?
Yeah.
Yeah, so he split them. So he had 1 on the flank on the way far on his right, and then 1 that was kind of closer to where the battle's taking place on his left side of the field. Okay. So, yeah, I'm not sure why he didn't go for 2x2.
I guess I disproportionately value rerolls, I guess. So, having cavalry unit that rolls red, blue, blue without a reroll still seems...
So one of the things you have to understand about Josh and I is we are so snake-bitten by dice that...
I'm right there with you.
If we could take an upgrade that said turn every upgrade into a training upgrade, we would take it.
Yeah, so I totally agree.
Rank
yeah,
discipline in every slot.
And I mentioned this before, but this one time, the first time I played Ankar Mero, I rolled 4 white dice. 3 of them were blank, and that will forever haunt me. So it was brutal.
Oh, not, the pain! Yeah,
it was brutal because he wasn't brutal, and then the rerolls anyway.
So, not the good brutal that does extra damage.
That's right.
If you want to quit.
So, so he had the 2.1, and I think it was more of what you were talking about earlier about tying up units. If you could just send flesh rippers in to tie something up so that everybody else could approach, that's probably what he was thinking. And
I mean,
talk to him later about that.
I suppose six hit points of flesh rippers per tray, I guess, is better than 4 hit points of berserkers per tray.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the berserkers were equipped with the psychosis siren.
Yep.
Yeah. So he could do the morale tests at will, essentially.
Right.
And he also had the banner scamp, which says when an enemy at range 1 to 5 would suffer a morale test, you may instead cause it to receive panic tokens equal to the severity of that test. Limit once per round. And then after an enemy at range 1 to 5 performs a rally, it receives 1 panic token. So that was
in fact that was the one upgrade that made us actually realize we were playing wrong until we saw that article. Because we thought you roll a morale thing on the dice, and okay, well, I don't want to spend 1 morale card. I'm going to give you a token.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's not how the game is playing. We were kind of cheating a little bit. And so it was like, oh, this card does that. Oh, that means you can't do that normally. Okay.
Someone corrected me on that at my first store tournament. I was like, oh, yeah, that's a good point.
Yep.
So in my army, I had Ankar Mero with Violent Forces and Fortuna's Dice, because why reroll if you can just set the die?
Right.
And then I had Archers, 2x2 of Archers with Combat Ingenuity and Tempered Steel, 3x2 of Reanimates, with, I think they were running Mistland Saboteur. And then I had what was the other one? A Carrion Lance. 2x1 of Carrion Lance with Rank Discipline. So his Flesh Rippers came and tore apart my worms, and Ravos was right there to help.
Oh, jeez.
Because he dealt the wounds up close, and that was... Yeah. That was terrible. So Ankar Mero had rushed into the blighted terrain in order to, you know, have a more wide area that he could shoot from. Mm-hmm. But in so doing, I forgot that he would cancel his rally. So he still had the panic token in the beginning. And I couldn't ready Fortuna's Dice. And it was about 3 more rounds before I had time to ready Fortuna's Dice.
Oh, no.
And so because of that, combined with Viscera Goblet, I think Ravos lived 2 rounds longer than he should have.
Oh my goodness.
So Viscera Goblet really paid for itself there because of my little mess up. And I think the banner scamp helped too. He decided that he would ignore, because I lacked Fortuna's Dice and I my rolls weren't that great. He said, oh, Ankar Mero's not a problem. I'll focus on the rest of his army. And Ankar Mero came back at the end and just cleaned up. So that worked out well. But the Psychosis Siren, I guess... You know, the interesting thing is, in-game, they specialize in panic and, and fear. And outside the game, when I'm playing, I look at that and go, what am I going to do against this? I'm afraid. There's so many different threats and moving parts that's going on. So I think it's important to try to keep your head straight and realize that this is a vicious game. And units get lost, and you just have to try to trade better than they trade, you know?
Right, right.
And that's... Yeah, so it ended up that it was a pretty close win. I think there were a bunch of ways it could have gone sideways, but it ended up being all right. The big part was Ravos came in to try to finish off my... I think it was engaged with the Carrion Lancers, too. All right, because the Carrion Lancers weren't dead yet when Ankar killed the cavalry, the Flesh Rippers. So Ravos said, all right, I'm going to come in here, and he's going to attack them. And we blighted him with our archers, so he had won... One white die. That's all he had.
Okay.
And so he dealt 1 wound. So they had one, though, the remaining lance had 1 wound left. And then he ate the lancer for dinner at the end of the round.
Okay.
So, So that was.
So
that was
I
good. Blighting's good.
Sorry. I don't remember hearing you say this, but was he proxying cards and units or just playing with what's released?
Just what's released.
Okay. Yep. Gotcha.
So, it was a good match. I think it definitely felt like it was It could have been his early on, and then and Carmelo came back and saved it for me. So
nice,
definitely a close match. So I think there's speed. Oh, that was another one. He failed the charge. He did that fast charge with his aggressive streaker.
Uh-huh.
And you know, March 4, March 2, and he fell about half a centimeter short of my reanimate.
Oh, dang!
Ooh. So, and then I think, yeah. So that was really helpful for me.
Yeah. I think my just a final closing thought on the oath hook is that, I think when you see a new army, a new faction, whatever, and you're seeing a new way the game is going to play, you're not exactly sure what's going on. And so I think it's scarier when we see previews, because we're not sure exactly how it's going to work itself into the game.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, having said that, yeah, I haven't played, like, I imagine playing Carson is going to be a great deal different than playing Ryan. You know, Carson is very accomplished. Ryan is very new. He's a good Armada player. I have no doubt he'll get there. But just him learning the ropes on a pretty advanced faction was tough on him. But also, it didn't bear the full weight of what the Uthuk were capable of because of missed opportunities, I'll say. I have no doubt that more experienced players will not miss as many opportunities. And when those situations arise, I won't be as battle tested against that. So it's gonna take some time to kind of, I guess, get over the new hotness, if you will, and see, okay, everything's calm, everything's back to normal. I know what to do against reanimates. They're going to want to blight me, so I have to rally the heck out of my units. I know what to do against elves. They're going to try and move around, so I'm going to have to immobilize them and gun them down. I know what to do against humans. They're always going to try and rally themselves and inspire themselves. So I'm going to have to, you know, counter that somehow. But right. now we're against a faction that, hey, not only do we like to panic you, but we don't care about armor at all because we just have toughness. And that's kind of scary in itself because, unlike Death Knights, okay, man, I have to overcome this huge hurdle of 3 armor, but then you only take 1 wound to kill.
Right.
Well, and I think what that does specifically, though, is a lot of armies have been building for mortal strikes, mm-hmm. or more towards that. But if you have 5 wounds and 2 armor, mortal strike isn't necessarily the thing you want to be going for.
Right.
True.
If you're a 3-3 threat, or even 2 threat, a mortal strike is worth less than, you know, a double hit dice.
Definitely.
Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting just to see how these, to get more used to them. And I'm sure once we figure it out, there's gonna be new tricks. So.
Oh yeah, yeah. If it's Fantasy Flight, it's a living game, and there will always be expansions on the horizon that will change how we play and keep it interesting. So. Okay, so those are some of our thoughts on playing the Uthuk. If you have any thoughts on playing the Uthuk, be sure to email the show at runecasterspodcast@gmail.com, or go ahead and give us a shout on Twitter at Runecasters, or go ahead and post on our wall at facebook.com/Runecasters.
Alternatively, if you want to drive up to the Pacific Northwest and play a game with us, I'll play.
Yeah. Josh has no qualms about taking on all comers. So he's not even creeped out when people track him up on the internet to go find him. So,
well, when you put it like that,
right?
I'll still play the game.
Come Facebook stalk me and find out where I live and play so you can play me in the game. Anyway. So we're going to have, I'm going to throw it over to Gabe, who is going to try and lead us in the organized conversation-ish of our apology tour that we've been promising for many, many episodes now. Gabe, take it away.
So as you probably have heard, there's been a lot of reviews that have been done by the Runecasters, and they keep saying, you know, we actually haven't played this yet. We're just reviewing things that have just come out or just been announced on the website.
I still haven't played the game yet.
Shh, Josh, they don't know that.
So,
sorry.
So we're probably wrong about these. We'll see. So we're going to go through today some of those upgrades and see just how wrong Josh and Aaron have been. So I understand you guys have chosen some that you would like to go through to talk about. Do you want to start with those?
I'll go ahead and let's see. You want to alternate, Josh? Let's alternate.
That sounds good.
In case we find a... Okay, so my first and foremost apology has to be to simultaneous orders. I didn't think simultaneous orders was worth it when it came out. And I'm pretty sure I said because the card pool was small. Well, let me tell you, friends, the card pool is now big enough that simultaneous orders is fun to play with. I had taken an Elven Deepwood Archer unit tournament, and I had no qualms. I was not going to win the tournament. Okay. I put together these Deepwood Archers just to play with simultaneous orders. So every slot I filled with a skill on my Deepwood Archers. I had Dispatch Runner, my Leonx to attack again. And then I had the Storm Sorceress, basically just damage based on the runes. And, I'm missing one. And I just went through
all of them.
Oh no. So I did Dispatch Runner. And the Rallying Starling to rally up Moment of Inspiration on my Leonx Rider as well. And I had the time of my life.
That's amazing.
Every time I did something, it was like move forward one and skill. You know, shift one and skill. Archery attack and skill. What am I doing for a skill? I want to do some damage this turn, so I'm going to do Storm Sorcerers and Fire Rune. oh, my Leonx are engaged with the bounty unit. Okay, well, we're going to go ahead and do Rallying Starling and give him back Moment of Inspiration, and then we're going to have the Dispatch Runner remind them that they need to attack that unit.
All in the same round.
All in the same round. And so I would shoot a unit, untap Moment of Inspiration, take the panic on my Leonx Riders, and then have my Leonx Riders eat the unit also.
You mean stun? Take the stun?
Morale, right?
Dispatch runner gives a stun when on the
target. No, but right, the morale is for shooting into an
engagement. I see.
Yeah. So
Right. I see what you're saying. Yeah.
Yes.
Cool. Well, that...
So, yes. So they did end up with a stun and a morale, but yes. Yeah, you're right.
Cool.
Yeah.
So that brings me actually to one I wanted to ask about.
Sure.
Fire Rune. Aaron, you gave that a hearty thumbs up when you reviewed it. Do you still think Fire Rune is worth it? Is good?
I actually really do like it. And I especially like it on deep because they're naturally precise.
Yeah,
so if you have a small unit of Deepwood Archers, Fire Rune, when you throw a lot of Rend Runes, can do a lot of damage, and it can help augment the damage that the Deepwood Archers don't naturally do on their own, if that makes sense. Because they're not a huge damage unit. But Fire Rune can be a Fire Rune and then an attack can be really damaging. Can be really demoralizing.
Does Lethal add to Fire Rune?
Yes.
Yes, it's a ranged attack. So if there's a situation where you are lethal, yes, it will add to both Fire Rune and your normal ranged attack.
Just making sure.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm sold.
Cool.
So, the only time I've tried Fire Rune was on a 1x2, so 1 wide, 2 deep Rune Golem.
Yep.
Which is nice.
I've done that.
But the damage is just so underwhelming compared to what you know they could do in melee, you know? So it's nice to have, but I can definitely see it with simultaneous orders on a already ranged unit because you're like, yeah, why don't I attack twice?
Yeah.
But, yeah.
And I think it could work well on crossbows as well.
Yeah, I could see that.
And
cool. Should we turn it over to... do you have one more thing?
Yeah, I just wanted to add, I have not tried my Genghis Khan cavalry idea yet, where I use Fire Rune on Oathsworn cavalry or Leonx Riders. I don't think... Can they take... Yeah, they can take equipment. So that is my next time I have a lot of time to play games just to do something silly. I'm going to have to do it on the riders. Yeah.
Cause they've got the 1x3.
Oh, that's right. Cause I think there would be nothing.
Oh, but they can't take the Leonx Riders. Can't,
I thought they could take equipment, right? Can't they take?
They cannot take equipment.
Oh, okay. So it's going to have to be on the sworn.
They have tempered steel built in. They have master crafted weapons built in. Sorry,
you're right.
Shields the exhaust.
Yeah. Okay, so yeah, it had to be on these. But I just think historically, you know, the Mongol hordes that used to ride their horses and just destroy the armies of Russia and Eastern Europe with this new combat style of shooting from horses and encircling and just like gunning down many, many, many units of these armies that came to defend them on the steppes and stuff. I just think it would be fun to try and make that happen in Rune Wars, just running mm-hmm. circles around someone with your cavalry and shooting them at the same time with a fire rune. I think that would be fun. If I can make it work, it'll be awesome. I'm pretty sure it's not a meta type list because otherwise a lot of other people would be playing it. I just think it'd be fun. Okay, Diatribe over.
Okay, Josh, what do you got?
I guess I'll apologize to Terrifying Heraldry a little bit.
He deserves it.
Yeah. I didn't like it before. I think it's definitely better than I had originally thought. Having probably reviewed this and not having a lot of games played, I particularly like Terrifying Heraldry on, say, my 2x2 of Rune Golems, or a larger unit of Rune Golems, something that's going to survive, because just the constant flow of panic is nice. Because panic cards, especially when you draw enough of them to have a reasonably good panic come out, is wonderful in this game.
And in fairness to us, we didn't really understand how dynamic the morale deck could make a battle.
Yes.
In the beginning.
Totally understandable. Terrifying Heraldry is definitely high on my list. 5 points is a little steep.
Yep.
Sometimes, but it can't be sniped out.
Mm-hmm.
Not a figure upgrade, so.
There aren't a whole lot of Heraldry upgrades that I like, to be completely honest. So Terrifying Heraldry being on the list is...
Yeah.
Is good.
I think it's one of my favorite slots, so we disagree there. Let's shoot it back on over to Aaron. Aaron, what's next on your list to apologize for?
So I think probably the biggest apology I owe is Vicious Roots. I think I threw around words like useless, waste of ink and paper, sentiments like this. But that was before Ben from Ireland. Mr. World Champ himself showed us the value of this card. This card is, what, 2-3 points? Research, let's see. It's 3 points. It is a discard. I generally don't like discards.
Right.
After I interviewed Ben, I said, you know, my problem with discards is I never pick the right time to use it. And he said, hey, dummy. I mean, he didn't say that. He said, hey, look, there's only one time you can really use this. And that is in that time when you are close range and the next turn you know you're getting charged. The game itself tells you when to use this card. There is no waiting for the moment of opportunity. It is clear as the nose on your face. And ever since then, I tried it out. I've played a few people with a clone of his list, more personalized, I guess, clone of his list. And oh my goodness, do I love Vicious Roots. Vicious Roots lets you immobilize the people who are going to come to charge at you. And then you can either you have a couple choices from there. You can charge them with your Leonx Riders, or you can keep attacking them with your trees and hope you stun them. You can even get them immobilized the next turn they rally, then you charge them with your tree and you immobilize them again. And as long as you're using your trees in kind of an MSU style, where it's a 14 to 17 point, depending on if you have Vicious Roots on it or not, kind of thing, what do you care if you lose it, a tree? Because it's 17 points. It's punching above its weight without the Darnati infantry in the Elven arsenal yet. you just simply don't have a lot of options for melee attacking, and this is just unbelievably awesome for immobilizing a unit and then bringing your archers or Megan around and saying, yeah, we're just going to hang out here and gun you down. And if we build up panic on that tree, I don't care, because he's only 14 points. So if he leaves, meh, whatever. I'm still going to kill your six-tray unit of infantry. Your four-tray unit of cavalry, you know.
Sounds solid, yeah.
So, Vicious Roots, I apologize. I'm sorry. I didn't see your value. I have been shown the way. And ever since, you have been an important part of my list building.
Excellent. Josh, what's next?
Warcrier is next, but not in the way you might think. Originally, I was neutral on Warcrier. I don't like Warcrier now. I'm not apologizing to Warcrier. Warcrier is getting demoted. I have never... It's 5 points. It's a skill. I have better upgrades that fit either of those. I have never gone, oh man, I really wish I could choose an enemy unit to receive a bane that I just had.
For a skill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe it could be useful, but no. Just... Maybe it's because I play humans and elves now, and I didn't really get a chance to play it when I played the undead. But there has, yeah, like, if it's a stun, most of the things that I'm going to use this for would cancel the stun before I get to use the skill, or right, would cancel with the skill. Exactly. You know, I'm not, yep, taking this. You're just not getting that.
Yep.
Problem solved for them,
or
there.
Or if you want to get rid of immobilize, well, you march first. They discard the immobilize token.
Yeah.
So much.
The only time Warcrier I suppose be useful is I'm going with never. So yeah, Warcrier, never. I don't like you.
I'm gonna drop some knowledge. So Ankar Maro's army building ability, Hidden Lore of the Shadow Council. You can bring a unit from another faction, a non-unique unit, and when you do, it receives 2 blight tokens.
Yep.
And so I have been using Warcrier on a 2x2 of spearmen to augment my Wykar armies, and it has been so much fun. Sometimes I've even won with it. But the key there is that you have a timing between when the Carrion Lancer attacks, right before the Carrion Lancer attacks. So you send the blight over, he goes into somebody who was not previously blighted, they had no idea this was coming, and you wail on them with surges and mortal strikes. Hmm. And it's... But, like many of the other upgrades, like Duskblade we talked about last episode, there are some niche builds that really work, but I'm going to agree with you. Most of the time, I'm not reaching for Warcrier.
Yeah.
I mean, see, Carrion Lancer attacks at 5. So if you want to really make use of that,
you have to do a march. You have to do it at 3 or 4.
But you could do anything as long as it's 5 or earlier.
Right.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah.
So yeah, you're not getting the cool attack. You're not getting a shift. You're not getting the long march.
Yeah.
Hmm.
But here's the thing.
I'd rather just toot my horn and knock all the blight off.
I think it's such a valuable weapon. But that's just, yeah. It's a pretty big cost.
You might have found the corner case. And the only thing I can say is that it's a skill. It's 5 points. It costs your champion slot. So it makes sense in your case because you're not competing. You're using spearmen out of faction. You're right, not competing with Citadel Weapons Master or Lance Corporal. There's not the competition for the spot,
yeah,
that spearmen have in faction, I guess, if that makes sense.
That totally makes sense, yep. So, and I think that's probably the only time you'll find it useful is when you're not competing for these other really valuable figure upgrades.
With just give them Dispatch Runner and have them...
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
And Dispatch Runner might be a better thing with Death Knights now.
So I'll tell you really quick, the other thing is metered march. Metered march, yeah, on these Decon, if they have Warcry and metered march, you march basically 1 millimeter and launch Blight, and you stay unengaged. Pretty sweet.
I can see that being fun.
I think I'm going to have to agree with you. Wasn't up, now a down. That's... Yeah. That makes sense to me.
Okay.
Cool. So I'll move on. Aaron, you have another one?
Let's see. I think, you know what? I'm going to have to apologize to the Verdant Sorceress. So for those of us who don't remember what I said. The Verdant Sorceress is a 3-1 figure upgrade, sorceress upgrade. And for a skill, you can choose an ally at range 1 to green rune and overgrown. And that ally can remove the green rune number of banes. And it's overgrow 2. 3 points. And I'm going to be completely honest. I'm still stuns down on the ability. I am turned to thumbs up on is that overgrow does not sum like other keywords in the game.
Mm.
So the maximum number of overgrow or on all your upgrade cards, that's the number of overgrow you get. You do not get to sum them. So what I am thumbs up on is I get a 3-1 figure upgrade that lets me to put 2 overgrow tokens out. That's what I use her 3 points.
Yeah.
For her 3 points, that buys her into my art. And do I use that ability? Heck no, because I'm freaking rally, man. You're telling me that for a skill token on my archers, I can do a free pseudo rally with another unit? Hard pass, I think. I'm still not up on that. What I really want is, I really want her to overgrow 2 out of the 3 terrain on the board, so I can march my archers around those terrain and get a white dice with my hunter's guile. Solid. And she's 3-1, so she does add a hair of durability and survival. Yeah. And for me, 3 points, that's worth 3 points for me. Her ability, if I want to use it and I don't have anything to do and I'm spiking the ball in the end zone by killing their last people and just making sure that I don't know, get a blight token off of a unit that's going to kill their last unit so I can table them, so I can roll that extra dice I wouldn't get to roll. Yeah, maybe, but...
Yeah, you'd almost expect this to be Verdant Sorceress, Overgrow 2, and then the skill action underneath, because you're taking it. Because the skill action is like the bonus. Yeah.
Absolutely. The skill action is the bonus that I'm kind of like, yeah, I've got it in the back of my mind that I can use it in case I find the corner case I wanted in.
Yeah. Well, and especially after talking just recently about our Thuk experiences with the way they deal panic, that could find some use. But it's not your first choice because it's tied to the runes, you know?
Right. Exactly. Yep. Exactly. But in fairness, she's a thumbs up because she's already bought her way into my unit for toughness, or I guess her armor, and putting, there's nothing else that's overgrow 2 out there. And when the elves initially came out, I said, okay, I'm going to pick the 3 cards with overgrow that I like, and I'm going to get to overgrow 3 things because keywords sum. And then they came out in the errata and they said, oh, by the way, overgrow is overpowered if it sums. So overgrow is by the maximum card number, not by the summation of the cards.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how she gets into my army.
Makes sense.
Well, thanks. Yeah, she thanks you as well.
Right.
Josh, back to you.
I'm going to do this one in 2 parts, so bear with me. I'm going to call this one the drummer apologies.
Oh, okay.
I was lukewarm on the aggressive and the tactical drummer when we initially reviewed them. Since then, I love the aggressive drummer, and I hate the tactical drummer. The aggressive drummer makes sense, and just like having that upgrade all over, you know, I think everyone has an aggressive drummer.
Yeah,
there's a drummer, shrieker, crier,
Starling,
Starling. So everyone has an aggressive drummer. I generally like them. In the case of the aggressive drummer for the undead, it gets you out of making a -1 charge forward if you're reanimates.
Yeah, and it lets you do a charge on a wheel maneuver, which is awesome.
Significantly better than what they normally get to do. So it saves you a bit of maneuvering. He's 5 points, which is usually my threshold for too expensive. The figure upgrade that's only 1-1, but man, being able to charge and not have that penalty as a bunch of shambling corpses is fantastic.
Yeah.
Yep.
Amen.
Tactical drummer, I've tried it. And I just, you combine it with Blighted Vexillon Bearer. So
yeah.
Okay.
They charge into you, they get a blight, and you're like, yep. I'm out of here. You back up, they charge that, you give them a blight again. And then yeah. they roll
I
accuracy.
I like that combo, actually, yeah.
And he's like, gone, yeah. it's kind yeah. of quirky.
And he's only 2 points for four armor, which makes him useful, but I've never, like, I've used the tactical Starling with the elves before to shift mm-hmm. out yes. with the like, the archers moving out and being like, haha, we're leaving now. But I've never run away with the reanimates before.
It's such never, a bad initiative yeah. to move on.
Yeah.
You give up so much.
I don't want to. I'd rather just sit here and smack you in the face.
Yeah, now correct yeah. me if I'm wrong, but the tactical only has tactical musician, I guess I'll say, only has a spot in the reanimate or the Wykar and the Latari armies. There's no tactical Cornison or tactical Shrieker, right?
I believe there is a tactical Shrieker.
Oh, so humans are the only ones who miss out on them.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, that's interesting. What about this would be overpowered on humans?
I'm not sure what they did with the musicians, but the idea was there are
four types, and each one's missing one.
Yeah.
Right.
And I don't know if it was just arbitrary at the end there. They said, well, I guess they have to lose one of them.
Right.
That's honestly, like, so what would you want to use, a tactical horn guy?
Well, I'm just wondering.
Tactical horn just doesn't sound right at all,
Right, the tactical cornison, what would that give you on humans? Because I agree, Josh, and I think I kind of showed you this trick when I was playing elves, because that tactical Starling on the Latari faction is fantastic.
Fantastic.
The elves shift all over the place.
Especially with the double surge shift after you attack.
Oh, yeah, double surge shift and the fact that you can shift... you'd have to shift so you can move back, because you have to move directly backwards on your first mm-hmm. shift to disengage. But then with the elves, you can shift back, and then you can shift either back again or one direction or the other, which could be useful depending on. So if I shift back twice, it's probably because I have a tree there that you're going to charge, and then I'm going to be able to gun you down with my archers, or I can shift over. Back and over, and then you have to either make a turning charge, or you're going to have to do something with a smaller movement or later initiative, etc., etc. But now I've lost my train of thought. but it makes sense. I think the bottom line, it makes sense for the elves a lot more because of their movement shenanigans. It really pairs with elves. The fact
horses don't even have a shift.
So it makes me wonder: Did the designers recognize, okay, this is absolutely worthless for humans because humans are going to stay in the fight until they're dead or they've killed everyone else? Or did they realize this is going to be overpowered on humans? And now that I say it out loud, I think it's probably the former. I think it's probably like, yeah, human units are going to stay in the battle until they're either dead or killed every one of their opponents, and mm-hmm. it's not useful.
Yep, and the skeletons are going to stay in battle until they're already dead.
Right.
But yeah.
Oops.
Yeah, I'm so Blight of Excellent Bear is the only place I can see tactical drummer.
It's good you brought that combo up. I would never. I mean, I don't play Wykar, but
neither do I.
If somebody brought that combo to me and then was like, "Look at you, dummy! You're gonna do this. I'm gonna totally murder." Oh my god!
And it's a banner card too.
Yeah.
Yep.
So usually
he's making his case for banners.
Right.
Yeah. 4-1. Right. You said that was.
I know
it's Raven Standard Bearer.
Yeah, the tactical drummer is.
His tactical drummer is. Is that one 4-1? Looking it up now. Research. I don't have that one memorized because I've not played it.
Oh no, he's the 4-1.
He's 4-1. Yeah. So you have to run tactical drummer with the Raven Standard Bearer, heraldry, because they're both 4-1.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's a lot of extra.
Aww. Goodness. Yes, so. That's a lot of juice. For 5 points?
It's an extra tray per guy.
Right?
It's an extra tray per guy. Yeah, it's an extra two trays on your undead unit. Holy
smokes.
Not
bad.
That's a good thought.
Although it's an accuracyable tray of guys.
I'd rather they take that tray than a different, you know? Take that one figure instead of a whole tray.
It'd be the balancing out, like, your red actions are decreased by one versus possibly reducing your precision or your threat.
Right. Yep.
Decisions.
So many. So, speaking of decisions, Aaron, what else did you decide to revise your opinion on?
Oh, boy. Let's go with the Grey Haven Channeler.
So, interesting.
I apologize to the Grey Haven Channeler. And I know there are a lot of people who don't share my opinion on this, and I interviewed DJ, the Gen Con champ, and Ben, the world champ, on this, and they do not value rune manipulation. I don't want to put words in their mouth, so I want to be careful about saying this. They don't value rune manipulation as a strategy, because where the runes will fall where they may, and as good as they are for me may be as bad as they are for you, but I think their attitudes were more adapt and overcome. And hopefully they don't email me and say, that's not what I said. but the Grey Haven Chandler is 1-1, and after energy tokens are cast during setup and the end phase, you may exhaust this card to recast up to 2 energy tokens in the energy pool. This card led Josh and I to go down a really fun rabbit hole with Golem. You remember that, Josh?
Vaguely.
Yeah, so what we were doing is we were taking 1x2s of Golem with Fire Rune, and we were taking, this is before Crossbows came out,
yep.
So we were taking a 6 tray of infantry or some kind of cavalry as our main force, and then we'd have a 2 tray of cavalry with a rallying cornison. And what we'd do is we'd basically go fishing for red and or blue runes, depending on what came up with the Grey Haven Channeler, and we'd untap him with that small useless unit of spearmen so he could do it again. And basically we're using Brutal X and red runes on our Fire Rune to have basically, the way we thematically imagined it, was Golem throwing boulders on fire at people. And it led to some pretty fun lists, I think.
I just don't think it hurts enough as the Fire Rune.
Yeah, it doesn't hurt enough, and it doesn't fulfill the potential of golems. And the reason we were having it 1x2 is so we could with Hawthorne re-roll. You can do that, and yeah, so we could get the reroll with Hawthorne's help mm-hmm. there. But they were fun little lists to play around with, and they made golems quite fun. And I think we went to one tournament in Meeple's Games in Seattle, and that was completely unexpected. I think Josh played that unit. That was the first unit I played elves in, or the first tournament I played elves in. And Josh took a list very similar to what we had been kind of mentally concocting about this, what we can do with runic manipulation for the first time. And it might not have been meta-defining, but it was fun, and the first time it threw a lot of people off guard, I think. I think Josh did very well in that tournament because people were like, wait, ranged golems? What? How are you doing this? Grey Haven Chandler's moving the runes around? What? Why? Oh, no, this is terrible. So, yeah, it led to some fun stuff. So I think Grey Haven Chandler is a bit expensive still. He's probably not meta defining, but he led to some very fun games.
He has a place. That,
I apologize. Yeah, he has a place.
I actually tried that combo out recently myself, and I found it entertaining, definitely.
Yeah, yeah. It's not always about winning. Sometimes it's just about going, hey, what kind of weird combination can I put together? And Grey Haven Channeler can do that with his runic manipulation ability.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Josh, back over to you.
So I had originally given Fallen Hero a no. I like the Fallen Hero more now.
Really?
I didn't play this myself. I was playing against it, but it was a Fallen Hero, and the hero was carrying Fortuna's Dice. And man, those guys hit like trucks when you can pick the doubles, the double hit every time.
Yep.
How do they pick it every? Oh, yeah. How do they pick it every time?
Fortuna's Dice.
How did they ready it?
They didn't ready it ever. It just hurts when they can choose.
They choose, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Because that's the thing. Fallen Hero, give him Fortuna's Dice, and I'm like, well, that must be why reanimates, why Y-Card doesn't have a rallying drummer. Bummer.
It got rallied, I think, once or twice in the game, but yeah, both both of the times it got used. That was
what size unit was that on?
3x3.
3x3.
Yeah, it was a huge reanimate star.
They get bigger than that.
They get bigger than that, but not mine.
Oh, I'm running bigger than that. I'm trying to see how big I can go.
Yeah, 3x3 with basically a double damage red dice every time. Every time they use it.
Yeah.
I should say.
Terrible. Oh my goodness. Yeah, that was a fun game to watch. That was Margaret, I think.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Neat.
We have on a side note, we have really built quite a populace of our store, I think. And it's quite amazing because it, you know, we're talking about on a tangent of building a community. It's amazing what just Josh and I going to the store and playing has done, getting the game out in public, and having people go, "Huh, what's that?"
Run demos have painted minis.
Run demos have painted minis and play in front of people, and people will go, "Hey, that looks pretty cool. Can I join you?" And it's like, absolutely. And we've gone from just the two of us to about 6 people, 4 of them being kind of reliable. Fairly reliable, I should say.
Yeah.
So, that's cool.
Yeah.
That's the one thing our group lacks right now. We have about 8 people who own the game and are willing to play in a league, but we don't have a set game night. So that's something we're going to have to work on just to increase visibility. Oh, cool. That was Josh, right? So, Aaron, did you have another one or reached our...
I did. I actually had Bull Pennon.
Oh.
And I said this was a bummer. And this was, why would I ever take this? Because it just does impact one. And I've been promising to apologize to this one for a long time. And I do apologize to Bull Pennon because we found out that the keywords... except for Overgrow, as we talked about earlier, some.
Yes.
Bullpennin on Leonk's Riders with Summersong.
Mm-hmm.
Deals out 3 panic per charge. And while it may not be Uthuk level of panic, it is fun to watch somebody go, OMG, I have now 3 panic tokens on me. And just watch... Okay, you're I
3?
Have, yeah, right.
It's 4, isn't it? The cats have one for the charge.
Right. Oh yeah, right.
Pennon adds one, and then Summersong has 2.
I thought her cavalry unit only did 1. Research.
Impact 1.
Yeah. So it's 3.
It's 3.
Yeah.
Poof.
But
that's
still
intense.
You know, when it hits and then you can pull off that maneuver when you're attacking with a smaller unit, but you make a 9 tray unit attack itself, or you know, whatever trays on a 6 tray unit leave in fear plus the damage you do to them with the charge of Leonk's Riders. It is just devastating. And it's one of the fun things about this game that make it so lethal and devastating that morale really makes the battle dynamic, as I said earlier. Bullpennon, wow. Bullpennon, terrifying heraldry. Josh already apologized to that one, but yeah, Bullpennon was the one I thought, why would I want to give Spearmen impact 1 or Golems impact 1, whatever. And now I know they sum.
Yeah.
It's fun. Oathsworn charging for 2. You know, things like that. It's
Death Knights charging for 2 or 3.
Right, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Stupid blue runes. Stupid blue runes,
that's right. Boy, oh boy. Like I said, it may not be meta-defining. We haven't probably seen it at big tournaments, but it is fun to watch somebody's eyes turn into big teacup saucers and just go, oh my word, what is happening?
That hurts.
Stop, please stop, I give up. But Bullpennon, I'm sorry for undervaluing you early.
Excellent. Josh, you have another?
My last one is close quarters targeting.
Aha.
I didn't like it.
Aww.
I like it better now.
And why is that?
I have ranged units to use it on now.
That's fair. I think that's completely fair.
I didn't really have ranged units to use it on before, and it got errated. So depending on what I was reading for the card, it's possible that I didn't like the old text. I have to go back and listen to the podcast specifically and see if I quote the text on the card as part of why I do or didn't like it. But I didn't like it. I like it now. It being able to, I think about most of your ranged units with maybe the exception of heavy crossbowmen, and then even then probably still heavy crossbowmen. They are terrible at melee. And it would be more useful, like, if you think reanimate archers, it would be a lot better if the reanimates could shoot at ranged at someone that's engaged with a melee so they can throw the blight out.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
Keep themselves alive longer. In the case of the humans, it's a little bit more iffy because you've got a red damage on the melee, but at 1-3, you have the mortal strike, so it's kind of weighing what you're shooting at for the humans. For the elves, close quarters targeting followed by sneaking away is delightful.
Oh yeah,
especially if you have the tactical starling that we were talking about earlier. You can shoot, leave, and laugh.
Yep.
Yeah, it's for the reanimate archers. I mean, combat ingenuity is a staple, but 6 points. And I'm actually starting to think, if I'm running 2 2-by-1s, for the price of 1 combat ingenuity, I could give them both close quarter targeting.
Mm-hmm.
Although 2-by-1 is not so good. 2-by-2 is better, because they won't last long at a 2-by-1 if once they get engaged.
Yeah.
But and Carmero's bringing them back, maybe they will. So.
Stupid Morrow.
Yeah, cool. Well, you guys touched on basically all the ones that I wanted to touch on, except for 2. I think we'll do these 2, and then we'll finish up with our little discussion here.
I'm having Craig leave real fast.
Well, Aaron, I want to get your thoughts on
Kenton.
You guys have pretty much touched on all the upgrades I was going to touch on, except there's 2 more. I have 1 for each of you that I still want to revisit. And the first one will turn to you, Aaron. Flank guards. You gave flank guards a thumbs up. That's a training upgrade. It says that when you are flanked, the opposing unit does not gain an extra die. How do you feel about that one?
Let's see. Flank guards. Do you know off the top of your head how many points it was?
5.
Oh, man. Okay. So if I were to review flank guards right now, knowing what I know and playing as I've played, 5 points is not worth undoing the extra die when getting. I would say A, there are better cards I would take in the training spot, and B, 5 points is a lot to ask of a card that's just barely gonna make the attacking unit a little less lethal, I guess. That might not be the best way of saying that.
Okay.
But yeah, I think I have taken flank guards on one list and I just didn't get flanked. And I think this might be in that category of stuff that I've talked about every once in a while that is hey, this is a security blanket for new players, or this is a security blanket for people who are going to put themselves in a place where they might get flanked or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're a good enough player and you're good enough at planning, maybe there's better, more advanced things you can do with this training spot. And I think that's where I sit now is don't get flanked. And if I do get flanked, I know I'm in bigger trouble than just the extra dice because I know my plan is going poorly. I'll say.
Yeah.
And I'll leave it at that.
Can I defend flank guards?
Please do.
So I think flank guards has a place in large units where getting flanked is part of the plan.
Hmm.
Where you've got in this probably not work for the undead, but where you have a large defensive something-something that's going out ahead of all your other guys, where that unit is large enough or mobile enough that you have to engage or you want to engage that unit. So, like, if you have to deliver... I'm trying to remember what the upgrade is, where you each of you has a unit with a token, or you have to take your unit with the token over to their side of their deployment zone. Oh. I think flank guards on a large star of something could be fantastically useful for keeping that objective unit alive.
That is interesting. Yeah. Yep.
So if you have an inkling that you know you're going to put that unit into being flanked, not that you're not a skip the part where you're good enough to not get flanked, but where you know that speed might be more important, or let's say you've got a ranged heavy rest of your list, so you need to engage the enemy over there instead of closer to your archers. Flanking is going to happen.
Yep.
Take flank guards.
That's interesting.
And if you look at what you tend to get flanked by, you tend to get flanked by cavalry or really fast infantry.
Yeah.
If you're getting flanked by cavalry, all of the cavalry in the game roll 3 dice. A lot of the cavalry in the game, at least the games I've been in, have either, you know, they're either multiplying by 2 or by 3 with column tactics. So you're dropping a dice that could be 2 to 6 damage by itself.
That's huge.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I will second what you said about not being good for reanimates, because
too slow.
They will always choose lingering dead, almost always. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely. I don't disagree with John. There's a place for it. I think I've used it on one list and didn't get flanked. So and now that I'm not playing humans anymore and I'm playing elves, they're much more mobile and much less. It's much harder to flank them. Let me put it that way.
Yeah.
It's harder to flank elves.
I think outside of a tournament setting, or like when you play where you throw down the three deployment options and the three objective options, I think flank guards would be fantastic. I'd pick anything with a token that has me running from point A to point B, or trying not to die.
Yeah.
Good call. So finally, we move to our last card, Windrune. Now, this is a card that's been called by some overtuned. However, Josh gave it a meh, and Aaron gave it a thumbs up. So, what do we think of Windrune currently?
Josh, you wanna go first?
This is for me, isn't it? This is for me.
Yeah.
I enjoy Windrune on golems. I think this has come up in the podcast before. The really early skill that they have to set off the Windrune is really nice, and it gives the golems a dodge. The shift with the reform at the end is arguably better than the golem's natural move.
Yeah. And it can be with that green, if the green rune.
You get three green runes. I have shifted, I have turned, I am now facing where I think you're going to be, and if the runes are really nice next round, I have a four red rune charge coming up.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. I hope you have flank guards.
Coming back around.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so I'll say, I probably said this probably a lot when I talk about my background in gaming. I always played the dodgy dexterity type guys in RPGs, and I'm always into the dodgy factions, as you can tell by me playing TIE interceptors and X-Wing and elves in Rune Wars. So when I see a card that just says this has dodginess written all over it, of course I'm into it. So my opinion of this card, the stock in this card for me has only gone up. Let me put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
I played this card the first time we went to a tournament, or the first time I played elves in a tournament, I should say. I did not have Fire Rune on my archers. I didn't realize how hard it was for elves to do damage, so I didn't have any damage supplements. I had Wind Rune, and I didn't do a lot of damage, but I didn't take a lot of damage because people were unable. I think Carson probably, did I play Carson in that tournament? No, I didn't play Carson in that tournament. I had a bye. That's right. I had two games and a bye, and it was, no one was able to pin me down was the thing. Is people would come after me with their big, I mean, I think, I want to say Chris and Ryan, different Ryan from the Ryan we played Uthuk with, but I think Chris and Ryan had Undead. I think Chris had Mauro and the building strategy with Mauro. So he started out with small units, but by the time he came after me, I was already on his flanks shooting him, and he didn't know which way was up, who he should come after, what the most lethal unit was going to be. So he couldn't really catch me. And then Ryan also had this embedded Ankur Mauro, and he was building his units up that way. Mm-hmm. And I had heard people over talking about me turtling, but it's natural for elves, right? Because the thing is with Wind Rune, well, I'm going to shoot and then I'm going to Wind Rune and back up because your reanimate archers are going to shoot me back if I don't.
Right.
And if you call that turtling, whatever, but then fine. But then elves are made to turtle.
Remind me, Deep Wood Archers shoot on a what initiative?
On a 5.
It's on a 5, okay.
Well, yeah, and that works out perfectly because reanimate archers also shoot on a 5, right?
Yep.
So what happens is reanimate archers spend a turn getting in range. The next turn I have initiative. Yeah. I shoot, I back up. They go, dang it. Now yep. We got to get in range again. And they march towards me again. And then I shoot them again and back up.
Yeah.
And this is a rinse repeat thing for 8 rounds. And it... Understandably frustrated some people because they hadn't seen it before.
Walk faster. Shamble faster.
Shamble faster. That's right. Yeah, and luckily I played 2 reanimate lists, and reanimates did not have cavalry yet. And the only people who were, until Death Knights, the only people who were really able to pin down elves are your human and other elven cavalry, you know, really. With Wind Rune, because it just makes you so mobile that you, and in fairness to reanimates or Wycar in general, yeah, I'm not going to do a lot of damage against you. That's absolutely fair. But here's the thing is you're never going to pin me down either.
Catch me if you can.
Exactly.
There you go.
That was such a fun day just because it was like, I don't know who watches Futurama out there. But it was just like being Zoidberg and just going whoop, 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 and just running away all day.
So do you feel like it's too powerful? Or do you think it's within its...
I think it's pretty balanced.
Okay. Because
in fairness, you cannot use that shift to disengage.
Right. I feel the same way.
Yeah, you cannot use that. As far as I understand the way the card is worded, you can't use that ability to disengage.
Yep.
So you can Wind Rune to reform yourself. You can Wind Rune to get yourself out of trouble, but you still have to be smart. Because you could back yourself into an obstacle. You could back yourself into the edge of the board and then you get pinned down real quick. So you still have to be smart. You still have to be a good player and you still have to have the fortune of getting green runes to pop up.
Yeah.
True. You have to have the dial that has a skill that's useful.
Right. Agree.
Or any useful initiative or not attached to something that you're never going to use.
Right. Yep. Right.
Cool. Well, thank you guys. That was really great going over those old cards. Yeah. Well, before we sign off, I want to give just 2 shout outs. First to Budgernaut, my brother. Thanks for playing with me. Glad you finally got into the game with the Uthuk. And I'm looking forward to more battles, either on Tabletop Simulator or on Vassal. Speaking of Vassal,
TML. I don't like your whole family.
Oh.
Well. Undead and Uthuk, I have to not like the entire family line here.
Right? We're pretty despicable. So Tigal on the forums has been spearheading a movement to get Vassal up and running, and he has been putting so much work in. So shout out to him.
Thank you.
Yes, definitely. Can't wait for it.
Looking forward to it.
By the way, let me know if you need any more graphics. Hopefully, I can help out.
I will draw things with crayon.
That might be helpful.
I think I could.
And I guess finally, this is going to come out after I play Will Ange, but Will Ange has agreed to meet up with me while I'm on vacation away from my hometown. So we're going to have a showdown, and I'll get to meet somebody else on the forums and see what their community is like. So that'll be fun.
Represent.
Hashtag, / that was fun. So thank you.
Ow. Hopefully it goes well. Nice close game. Well, that's all we have for you today. You can check us out at our website at runecasters.net. You can also check us out at Runecasters and on Facebook, facebook.com/runecasters. Also, we're now on YouTube. Just search for Runecasters. And we still have our Gmail address, runecasterspodcast. Why haven't we just recorded this so I can just throw it in at the end and not have to say runecasterspodcast@gmail.com?
I don't know. Maybe that would probably be a good
that's brilliant
savings opportunity, right?
Yeah, as long as we don't lose the file.
Yeah, as long as we don't lose the file when they come repair your house. Okay, I want to say, everybody, thank you for listening. And as an aside, I really want to mention something that happened recently. For those of you that have followed my painting blog, it is no secret that I'm a University of Washington alumni.
Uh-oh.
And Washington State University, our cross-state rival, has been struck with the very promising young man's suicide. And while he was in great emotional pain and he had a bright future ahead of him, unfortunately, even though I can say that they're a hated rival and everything, we hate to see that happen, especially to the community of our state. So I want to make sure everyone out there knows that we appreciate you. There is love for you. And please, if you or someone you know is having these thoughts, please call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255. Please do that. You are a valuable part of our community. We value each and every one of our listeners, and we don't ever want to know that you're in any kind of pain, and know that we have great appreciation for you as our listeners, as part of a gaming community, as part of the Rune Wars community.
As people.
It doesn't even, it doesn't even have to go as someone we know, or somebody who likes us on Facebook. But if you are a friend or ever having trouble, please do that. Do us a favor, do yourselves a favor, do your family, your friends, the favor of making sure you reach out. There's absolutely no shame in it at all. It is kind of with a heavy heart that we have to end the show, because that happened to a rather close-knit community, Washington State University, not in a big city like the University of Washington is. And everybody in that community is reeling because of it. But we will see you. We will talk to you again, I guess, in a couple weeks. And we are trying to make this bi-weekly release thing happen. The good news is it's happened this week when hectic schedules are out. And so we are going to try our best to put out 24 episodes this year. That is our goal. If you'd like to help us achieve that goal, help support us. We do have our Patreon page at patreon.com/runecasters. And you can donate on our website as always. All donations will feed directly into our content. We do this because it's a thing we like to do. I don't think any of us is planning on getting a major financial contribution. So with that, guys, are you ready to say goodbye?
Ready.
All right. Runecasters out.
I did it right.
Yes, Josh, you did good.
That was almost good.
That was almost good.